This is The Money on RN. You can podcast the show, find it online, or use the brilliant ABC Radio app. I'm Richard Ady, and it's time to talk actual cash. Because Sunday isn't only Valentine's Day, it's the 50th anniversary of decimal currency in Australia. That change from pounds, shillings and pence to dollars and cents was about more than money, of course. It came in the context of new feelings about our identity, especially our relationship with Britain. And to get a perspective on what it meant and how it went, in a moment you'll hear from Selwyn Cornish, historian of the Reserve Bank. But first, this.
In come the dollars, in come the cents, to replace the pounds, the shillings and pence. So be prepared when the money starts to mix on the 14th of February 1966.
It's easy to understand dollars and cents. 10 shillings equal $1. In $1, there are 100 cents. 5 shillings equal 50 cents. 2 shillings equal 20 cents. 1 shilling equals 10 cents. And sixpence equals 5 cents.
So be prepared when the money starts to mix on the 14th of February 1966.
Well, Selwyn, do you remember that?
I do. It brings back many memories.
How big a deal was this for Australian society?
Well, it was a very big deal. I think a lot of people thought that there was going to be considerable confusion, even chaos for a while, but it all seemed to go very well. I think that jingle and other advertising was played at saturation capacity, and I think people were pretty well prepared for it.
And it's self-explanatory in the jingle. Sounds simple. Did it work out simple?
Well, it did, and that was one of the big issues. Namely, was the basis of the new currency going to be on the pound or the 10 shillings? And there were senior people in the Treasury who thought it should be based on the pound. And Neil Davey, who was the executive officer, Dr. Davey, a Treasury official himself, thought it should be on the 10-shilling note, and that was very sensible because if it was based on the pound, a penny would be worth 2.4 cents. If it was 2.4 cents, you'd probably have to have a half a cent coin, and no one really wanted that.
All right, so the conversion from the imperial to the decimal currency, it was first introduced, I think, as an election promise by Robert Menzies in, 1958?
58, yes. There had been a private organisation backed by businessmen called the Decimal Currency Council, and the Decimal Currency Council had recommended, this was in 1957, that we convert to decimal currency. And then the Prime Minister, in his policy speech in December 1958, said that if re-elected, the government would be setting up a committee to advise us on how the government should go about implementing the new currency.
Well, having been re-elected, they didn't go out to break speed records to actually get this to happen, did they?
No, they didn't, although in February 59, only 2 months after the election, they did establish the committee, but it wasn't until 1963 that the government actually committed itself and proposed a time frame, namely February 1966.
What I have wondered about was why it took so long even to get to 1958. To me, it just, and I guess it's having grown up with the dollar, it's so much easier to work in base 10 than it is to work in base 12.
Yes. Well, that's very interesting because in 1937, a Royal Commission, a very famous Royal Commission, recommended that Australia convert to decimal currency. And their major argument was that this was a much more simple and straightforward system, that pounds, shillings and pence was complicated, it was costly, expensive. But then the war broke out, of course, and then post-war reconstruction and so on. So it wasn't until the mid-1950s that the idea was resurrected.
Now, I think a lot of people thought that it might be called the Ming, because this was Menzies' nickname.
Yes, well, I think one of the most contentious issues, of course, was what the name for the new currency was going to be. I think initially the public servants who were organising the process of change thought new pounds, but then they thought, well, we'll have old pounds and new pounds circulating together for some months, and that would be confusing. The Treasurer, Harold Holt, said that he wanted a distinctive Australian name, and he first of all proposed Auster and then Austral.
Mm-hmm.
And then the government itself decided it was going to be called the Royal. and that induced a great amount of criticism. And there were some public opinion polls which suggested that hardly anyone wanted it to be called the Royal, that dollar was the favourite choice, but people had other ideas, you know, the Kanga, Roo, Koala, Digger, and so on and so forth. And Ming was true. That was one of them, one of the suggestions.
How, I suppose, culturally important in terms of us seeing ourselves as more distinct from Britain was this?
The Royal Commission of 37 sort of, said, well, you know, there's a strong case to convert, but it expected that there would be opposition. And one of the arguments against would come from people who thought it important to maintain the pound because of its link to Britain. I think by the late 50s, early 60s, Australia was moving on. Britain was seeking admission to what was then called the European Common Market. We weren't very happy about that. We were aligning ourselves more closely with the United States. A lot of our machines, particularly calculating machines and cash registers, were coming from the United States and had to be converted. And that was expensive. And one of the strong arguments from business, of course, was that it would reduce their costs.
So when it actually happened, as I understand it, it didn't all happen at once. So did they introduce coins before notes or some notes before others? How did they do it?
Basically, the notes and coins were introduced, but there was a period in which the old currency circulated with the new. For people, older people, I think it took them a while to become adjusted. But I think people generally were surprised that the foreshadowed confusion didn't come about nearly to the degree that was expected.
That's, in a way, either a testament to the organisation of the government.
Yes.
And public servants involved, or it's perhaps a bit of luck, because you had the banks, government, industry, retailers, primary producers, and lots of people, I imagine, who weren't paying quite enough attention, and yet mostly, from what you're saying, there weren't too many problems.
Yes, well, I think that, you know, this was a superbly organised project. I mean, we tend to think of the Menzies period, perhaps right to some degree, it was a period when Australia went to sleep, that nothing really of significance happened. And yet, this was a major, major project. And it could have gone awfully wrong.
Were there any instances of profiteering?
Not that I know of.
There surely must have been. There must have been a bit of minor. Well, no, that
I'm
pie
sure
is going to cost you that much.
I'm sure there must have been. There were probably examples of some degree of trickery going on. But certainly it wasn't widespread.
One thing I did read about in preparing for this, Selwyn, was that there apparently, not long after the changeover, there was a fairly large amount of counterfeit $10 notes were found.
Yes. The group who were responsible for the forgeries of the $10 note were planning to do it with the old £10 note. And, you know, the timing was such that here was the new currency, so they continued with their plans, but now with the $10 note. They were very quickly found out. It's a very interesting story. But an even more interesting aspect of that was that it led the bank to start thinking about a plastic note, and that led to the polymer note.
I'm just thinking, in the 50 years, we've seen the 1 and 2 cent coins disappear.
Yes.
We've seen the $1 and $2 notes disappear. Now they're coins.
Yeah.
What's likely to happen next, do you think, Selwyn?
Well, I think some of us are getting a bit annoyed with the 5 cent coin, but and when it happens, I don't know.
The other thing I've noticed is that there are increasingly kind of retail places which don't take cash, especially, you know, food places, takeaway places. You have to pay wave or FPOS or something like that. We're actually, in some parts of our society, moving away from carrying it at all.
Yes, well, I think in some cases we're being forced to. If quite often now, if I hand over a $20 note or a $50 note, you know, they say, oh, sorry, we haven't got change. Do you have any plastic? So, yes, I sense that is happening and probably will accelerate that process.
Selwyn Cornish is the historian of the Reserve Bank. He's also at the ANU. Another thing to remember about Sunday, on Earshot, a new series called Money, It's Personal begins. Fenella Suter gets people to spill the beans on their spending and saving. And in this first program, it's all about how our parents and our childhood influence our attitude to money throughout our lives. That's this Sunday at 1. Do not miss it. The Money is produced by Kate Piercy. Our sound engineer is Martin Peralta. I'm Richard Adie.